came from a craft brewery or something, or he was hanging out at REI to tell you about the baseball team. And essentially to tell you in very calm, like almost bloodless terms, yeah, don't worry. Everyone's coming back except the hitting coach and the bullpen coach. We decided we needed to make a little change in direction there, but the manager's coming back, and really the plan's on schedule here. And there is that undercurrent of, how can you people not see this? We're right. You should just believe in us. That really rankles me, man.
He said they've made clear progress, and it's that quote that I think irritates me the most. The last Hurdle Huntington team won 69 games. This year's team won 76. They've gotten 7 wins better. They've gone from a bad baseball team to a below-average baseball team.
And they have the best pitcher in baseball on their roster.
If you want to point out that kind of incremental progress being made in 6 years, I guess you can do that because there's no consequences from the person who signs your checks. The fans won't like it. I don't have to like it. But you know there's no repercussions internally.
Well, that's maybe the most troubling thing about all this is that when he went to Bob Nutting and said, hey, I think Derek should be back, it sounds like Bob Nutting said, okay.
The thing about when we had Jason Mackey on to talk about this that is alarming, he said that it's just the owner accepting mediocrity, which is pretty obvious. And then the other thing he said was, like, concern about the effect of change having, like, this blow-up kind of feel about it, or if they remove their GM and manager, it would show everybody that the things they've done over the last 5 years were done
poorly
or like wastefully or whatever, and they don't want to admit that. They don't want to come to grips with that. I think Jason said they want to put out like the vibe or the sign that things are fine.
But people don't want that.
I know, but they want to project like, no, we know what we're doing. We're on the right path.
What are they going
in the right direction.
What good does that do them is, I guess, what I'm really trying to say to you. They might want to project that, but that's not what your customer wants. Your customer wants you to acknowledge you have screwed up. In this way, like, you acknowledging you've screwed up maybe makes you feel embarrassed, but it's better than doing this. This gets you nothing. This approach makes people much angrier than if they had been told by Bob Nutting yesterday or something, hey, I've relieved Ben Cherington of his duties and Derek Shelton. Ultimately, this team was not making enough progress fast enough for me. We have some pieces that we like, but we know we need to be better, and we know that we need to be better soon. That's a pretty simple statement. If he had done that, if that had been how yesterday went, and it wasn't Ben Cherington basically saying, yeah, I'm not even going to have the owner talk about this, I just told him to keep Derek Shelton and he agreed. If it was what I just laid out, people would still be mad because they're always going to be frustrated by this team. But I think there would at least be like a beacon of light on saying like, hey, maybe they'll hire somebody who does a better job. Maybe this will be different.
They have the second longest playoff drought in baseball now. The Angels are the only team that's gone longer without making the postseason. During the Tigers game, they said that among guys that are on the team right now, not guys that they're owed money to, players that have retired that they still owe money to, or guys they have cut or released or whatever, the team that they put on the field that beat Houston yesterday is making a total of $18 million. 18.
Just for the record, everyone likes to put that stat out there and, like, look at these plucky guys. I hate that.
Well, I know you do, but the point I'm trying to make is if you're the owner of this team,
yeah,
that would make me feel like, get the GM on the phone right now and have him explain to me how after 6 years, mm-hmm, this team has been able to start all over, rebuild, whatever else, and now with this young group, with young players that they've developed and have turned into good players, they're making the playoffs and winning playoff series, and we're in last place and still at home.
And the one thing that the GM might otherwise cite that would say, that would suggest, oh, this is what they've, why they've been able to do it, he could say, well, they've got one of the best pitchers in baseball. And the owner could retort, you've got the only guy better, probably.
Yeah.
Skubal is probably the second best pitcher in baseball next to Skeens. So, like, even the one argument that you would otherwise make, hey, it's a lot easier to build a team that gets to the playoffs when you have a true ace. Sorry, buddy, you've got that. You've got that, and you frittered it away. I mean, you know what really bugs me about the Tigers? It doesn't bug me, but it is notable. And maybe it's only because it's a byproduct of winning. But, man, the culture there seems better. Like, everything about that team, maybe it's because they started to come together and that's just one of those sports things. You start to get a couple wins stacked together. But the Pirates stacked wins a couple of times and then never made anything of it. When the Pirates go bad, they seem to go bad and break bad and harder than other teams, and it seems to last longer. There is a palpable malaise, in my opinion, that permeates the whole franchise that I can't even say that about the Tigers.
Look at the Royals. Up until this year, they were on the same timeline. The Royals last made the playoffs in 2015.
Enter Seth Lugo, enter Michael Wacha, enter a big deal for Bobby Witt Jr.
They started their rebuild at the same exact time as us. After the 2015 season now, both teams hung on to guys from those teams who they thought they could still win with. So they didn't tear it down, let's say, at the
exact same time.
Well,
the Royals have paid, like, going rate for Sal Perez to keep him there as, like, a through line to the last team.
Okay, and I guess and the Pirates would say that they did the same thing with Brian Reynolds, he's not from the playoff teams.
They would say
teams.
We brought back Andrew McCutchen after he had how many different tours of duty?
Right.
But, like, the Royals, I think you have said this many times, I want to stress this, pitcher wins are not a stat I care about, but I'm pretty sure Seth Lugo and Michael Wacha accounted for 30 wins because they pitched well enough for the Royals. You know what I mean? Like, the numbers also back it up. So those guys were taking the ball, I want to say, like 60-odd times. They won just straight away 30 of them themselves, and I'd be willing to bet they won a decent chunk more of the rest.
The Pirates needed to find the offensive equivalents of those guys. First base, outfield, of what those two starting pitchers have done
for the Royals. And here's the one other thing. Their young guy that was supposed to be the face of their franchise is an absolute superstar. He set a record. He broke a Clint Hurdle record. He became the youngest guy in Royals history, I think, with an RBI in a playoff game.
And our guy, Henry Davis, hit .148.
Well, if you want to even make O'Neill Cruz the analog, he's way older than Bobby Witt Jr., and he's not even close. Leland looks like a genius coming on with us saying Bobby Witt Jr. was like his big player to watch this season before the season even started.
Oh, yeah, I forgot he said
Remember
that.
Remember he said that? I said, who's basically the best player in the game or your favorite guy to watch? He said Bobby Witt Jr. The guy legged out an infield hit to win a playoff series for them.
Ray Fittipaldo is going to join us in a moment on the Steelers and recap what Russell Wilson did at practice today and how the Steelers look for Sunday's game against the Cowboys. I know a lot of Steelers fans are interested in this, Donnie, so give me the clip of Terrell Austin talking about T.J. Watt being held on every play and how he's dealing with it and what he's telling his players about Watt being taken out of the game by the Colts and how they can avoid that from happening again.
Terrell, what did they do to limit TJ?
Well, they do what a lot of teams do is they double them, they chip them, they do a lot of things, and I think that to their credit, Joe Flacco did a good job of getting the ball out of his hands. When he held it, some other guys got him on the ground or got to him, but I think that's really the thing that they did.
Have you noticed that unless they were calling holding on TJ, that the linemen may be pushing that envelope even more?
I mean, it's no different than what I kind of see every week. You know, the great pass rushers get held. TJ's going to get held every week, and they're going to hold him this week, and they might not get it. And so our job is to just, you know, we have to fight through that because that's stuff that's out of our control, and we just try to put together the best plan we do to try to get him in the favorable situations where that stuff doesn't affect the outcome of the game. But there's nothing we can do about that. We just go play our business. We just try to play ball, and we let New York take care of that. We let whoever's in charge of the refs take care of that. That's nothing we can do.
I do wish they were a little bit more bitchy about that.
Publicly?
Yes.
What do you think that gets you publicly?
Because I think the squeaky wheel gets the grease, yes.
So you think privately it has no impact if they're lobbying behind the scenes? Like, hey, come on, man, what the hell?
I think when it gets on fans' radar, the league doesn't like the perception that they play favorites and they ignore penalties.
Wait a minute. The league, though, has had to deal with the perception that the Chiefs, in a separate issue, get every call.
But that's because the Chiefs are a fan-favorite team, so they're fine with that. Micah Parsons had the same thing happen to him, where he wasn't getting penalties called. The Cowboys and Parsons put out all kinds of stats and data about, can you believe that on this unbelievable number of plays, they didn't call one holding penalty, and then the next game or the next two games after that, they called 7 or 8 of them. The more you complain about this, it's illogical that Watt could have such a quiet game and not get one hold call made against him.
Well, I think the bear hug plays are particularly egregious. The ones where he tries that rip move and it looks like he's being held, according to the league, that's not a hold. in their conception of the rules.
But if you're a ref, how is it not in your head like, man, T.J. Watt's had a very quiet game?
If I'm a ref,
maybe I should watch what happens.
If I'm a
very
ref,
closely on each one of these snaps.
Sure, it should. It probably should be. But if you're a ref and you watch him being bear hugged on one play, that's the one where I would just go, and you're cool with that? That's good. That works for you. That's a little odd.
Ray Fittipaldo joining us now. Steelers Insider brought to you by Western PA Injury Attorneys of LGKG, built on relationships, credibility, and integrity. LGKG.com. Russell Wilson said he felt great, acknowledged that he took part in some 11-on-11 drills today. Ray, if you had to bet, will he be elevated to Steelers backup quarterback Sunday night?
Yeah, I mean, Pony, that's the feeling I'm getting right now, I think. All along, there were going to be incremental steps in this process, and I think this is one more box to check off. Russell did say that he's doing more than he has since he aggravated that injury, so, you know, that's good for Russell. But, you know, honestly, the way Justin's playing right now is going to take a bad performance by him for Russ to get on the field. So, you know, we're getting closer probably to a point where Mike might have to be a little bit more definitive in who is starter is going forward, but even Russ said today that he's not completely cleared yet, so you know, that's probably a hurdle we don't have to clear until next week at the earliest.
Maybe starting then with next week's game, or I guess technically with this week's game, do you think Justin Fields is week in and week out kind of playing to keep the starting job, Ray?
Yeah, I mean, I know what you're saying, but that's a heck of a way to put it, because he hasn't really had a bad game yet, right? I mean, he's kind of steadily improved in each of the 4 weeks here. So I don't get the sense that one bad game, you know, would be the reason for the Steelers to make a change. Maybe if it's really bad and, you know, they have to get Russell in there just to change the momentum in a game, you know, I could see that happening. But, you know, you guys heard what Arthur Smith said today about him. I mean, that was the highest praise I've heard of Fields since he arrived, you know, back in March. So he's obviously playing really well, played excellent in that second half. Now the next step for Justin is play excellent for a full 60 minutes, get that offense going early so you get a lead and you're not playing catch-up the way they were against the Colts.
Ray, do you expect them to actually be less predictable to that end early in games? I think they are running the ball more frequently on first down than all but two teams in the NFL, while having less first down running success rate than everybody but the Cowboys. Like, it seems to me that the slow starts are at least somewhat, if not a lot, connected to the way they're calling these games early.
Yeah, and they're running into a lot of run blitzes the last couple of weeks. I know the Broncos did it. The Chargers definitely did it, and we saw the Colts mimic that game plan. So, you know, it's obviously something that the teams are scouting here. I thought it was interesting when Justin Fields was asked today if, you know, what kind of freedom does he have at the line of scrimmage to change running plays? And he said, no, if we call a running play, you know, we're going to call a running play. You know, it might not be the same running play, but he doesn't really have the freedom to audible to a pass. So maybe that's the reason they're getting stuck in some of, you know, these second and 12, second and 13 situations. You know, probably be a good idea for Arthur to change it up and maybe break his tendencies, but he's a guy who wants to be physical, wants to establish the run first, and then get the passing game going off of that. So we'll see if it changes this week, but I do have my doubts.
But how much of that, you say change Arthur Smith might change his tendencies, how much do you think that the let's run the ball early is just Mike Tomlin working through Arthur Smith?
Oh, that's part of it too. But, you know, Arthur isn't laying the blame at Mike's feet. He said today, you know, people were questioning him about the slow starts, and he basically said, listen, you know, we're not going out there and trying to do that. It's not that they're not wanting Justin to give him more freedom, excuse me, earlier in games. They just want to extend more drives. And then what he said, that'll give him more opportunities to make passes, make bigger plays, you know, later in, you know, in the first and the second quarter. So when you have three and out early on in the first and second quarter, it's tough to get that momentum going. And I think that's what they're searching for right now.
Ray, I heard Arthur Smith on Najee Harris. I think he's been pretty good in this Q&A that you guys do with him every Thursday so far. He was asked about why there was success with Patterson and really not with Najee, and he didn't talk for a minute and really didn't give an answer. What do you think's going on there? They really have no choice but to play Najee because of their injuries for Sunday's game. But why can't he look like an effective runner in this offense?
Yeah, I mean, to me, Tony, it seemed like it was more of a defense of Najee and, just kind of wanting him to still have that confidence. You guys see it. I mean, everyone sees it. Cordero hits that hole harder, and he hits it with more decisiveness than Najee does. And I'm not saying the offensive line isn't a problem early in games, because it is. I just mentioned the run blitzes. And, those young guys have taken a few series until they get to the point where they're playing a little bit better. So, the timing worked out where Cordero came in and he was hot, and it was noticeable. But, the thing about Najee, guys, I never have an issue with his effort. He's always available. He's always playing hard. I just question sometimes his vision, his ability to make something out of nothing. It just seems like when it's a play that's doomed, it's almost like, okay, he's going to lose a couple yards or he's going to get no gain. So, when Jaylen Warren's in there, I don't get that feeling. He could turn something or nothing into something. So, I don't have an issue with Najee and his effort. It's just that, he's a good running back, but he's obviously, in their eyes, not a number one. Let's face it. That's why they didn't pick up the option, and that's why when Jaylen Warren's healthy that they want to split the carries there.
Do you think there's any real chance that Harris, absent like a ridiculous sudden turn up to his performance where he's running for 1,700 yards, which is not going to happen, really see any scenario by which he re-signs with them or signs some sort of new deal with them, or do you think he's playing his last year in Pittsburgh right now?
I mean, it's hard to say because we don't know about Warren's health. I mean, this is the first time that Jaylen has been nicked up for an extended period, so you would think this is a one-off and, he's going to get healthy. If Jaylen Warren's healthy, I think they would be happy to roll with Jaylen next year. You still have Cordero Patterson playing his role, and then I think you go out and get another guy in the late rounds or in undrafted free agency to be Jaylen Warren's backup. I think that's probably the route they're going to go. But listen, if this injury situation continues with Jaylen and they don't have a lot of confidence in him going forward, then maybe they could turn back to Najee after the season's over. But I just think they have so much confidence in Jaylen when he's healthy. I think they kind of want to see what it looks like with him as the feature back next year when he's the guy.
Ray, will Davante Adams get traded to the Steelers?
It's a possibility, guys. Omar is going to, make those phone calls and take those phone calls. He's never going to not do his due diligence. But I think you guys know the Jets are probably more of an option for Adams. The Saints, because he played with Derek Carr as well. So Davante probably wants to go to a quarterback situation that's, known to him. But listen, if the Steelers make a great offer and they knock off, they knock the Raiders' socks off with a package, then, I could see it happening. But as of right now, I think the Jets and the Saints are probably the front runners.
What do you think is the most they're willing to give up for him?
Now, it depends on if they view him as a rental and they're going to cut him after the season and eat that cap money, fourth-round pick, maybe a third-round pick. But if they want to acquire him and then redo his deal, and let's say they bring him back, instead of for $35 million on the final 2 years, let's say they bring him back at $23 million a year, okay, for his age 33 and 34 seasons, which wouldn't be crazy, then maybe you give up a two. I could see them giving up a two and then maybe like a fourth or a fifth the next year if that happens. But, they would have to be really comfortable with being able to re-sign him and agreeing to that deal, guys, before that happens.
Ray, how likely do you think it is, period, that they will go out and acquire a number two wide receiver at some point between now and the trade deadline?
Right now it seems like they're – I don't want to say they have to. The wild card is Roman Wilson. I don't view him as a number two, especially as a rookie, but if you just add him into the mix, maybe he does give you a little bit more – At some point, maybe that lessens the need to go out there and make that splash. But as they're constituted right now, Van Jefferson getting like two catches a game for 20 yards and Calvin Austin one catch for 15 yards. I mean, they obviously need more from that position. So, Omar has proven over the years that if he can't pull something off, he will. So I just tell fans to stay tuned here. I think, if things stay the way they are over the next month or so, I think it's a possibility he can go out there and do something.
Right. Anything else here that we've missed that you think we should know about?
Larry Ogunjobi left practice early with a groin. He's been good, guys, and he's been available. So that would be certainly a minus for them going into that game. Hopefully he's okay. But that's one thing that happened at practice today that was a negative.
Ray Fittipaldo, Post-Gazette, Steelers Insider. Thank you, Ray.
All right, guys. Talk to you later.
5:30 on a Thursday means it's time for Total Request Thursday. You pick the topic. We gave you four options. T.J. Watt screwed by refs. Russell Wilson future. Pirates keep Shelton. Davante Adams trade rumor. More than 1,000 of you responded. You want more Davante Adams talk. So that's what we'll do here. We've got some notes from national insiders to get to. We also have what Ray just told us about the Steelers' pursuit of Adams. Josina Anderson, she's entered the fray here.
Josina has entered the chat.
She says this. The Raiders have maintained their desire for receiving at least a second-round pick for Davante Adams. There has to be an agreement on pick compensation before moving on to discussions about Adams' current contract, which then requires permission to determine if and how Adams is open to a restructure. So, to me, that it can't be that way. Because, as Ray pointed out, if Adams isn't open to restructuring his deal, and you're like, I'm not paying him $35 million next season, that's going to affect how much you're willing to give Vegas in a trade. You can't agree on trade compensation
before you agree on financial compensation.
Or at least have a good idea of what he wants to do.
Correct.
So the order that she laid out, I think, makes it prohibitive for most teams, except the most desperate ones, like the Jets, who probably don't care. Because Aaron
Rodgers...
The Jets
are beholden to doing what Aaron Rodgers wants them to do in almost every case.
More Josina. Can't get enough Josina. She says some league sources are also wondering how much Raiders ownership may be applying pressure on the requisite terms to deal the talented Vegas receiver.
Why do these releases and reports have to be just written in the most torturous way imaginable?
I thought the same thing would make sense.
But it's a rhetorical question, I'll tell you. Because when it's coming from the agent literally texts it to the person and has them write it up that exact way. That is the rule.
That gets back to my theory that Mark Davis is pulling his P.F. Chang strings here.
He did trade with the Steelers, though, in the Antonio Brown situation.
But that's Martavis
Bryant.
Yeah, but those are two completely different
and
situations.
And then, of course, he gifted us with Ryan Switzer. Who could forget?
So the difference there with A.B. and Martavis is we're giving the known commodity to them.
I know. Well, you said yesterday, I thought that he just wouldn't want to deal anybody with the, make deals
well,
with the Steelers,
Hold on. If he thinks he's screwing the Steelers, by all means, come on down, Antonio Brown. I'm getting an all-time great receiver for a middle-round draft pick. Of course I'll deal with the Steelers then. But in this situation, he's giving away an all-pro future Hall of Fame wide receiver, and he wants that guy to go on to do good things for the Steelers. I highly doubt he'd want to do that in his little peanut-sized brain, although he's worth multiple billion dollars. Because of good genes. Not genes he's wearing, but more the genetic lottery that he won.
He strikes me as more the guy who's wearing, like, off-brand sweatpants. Doesn't he wear... Wait, he was at some event where he was dressed wildly inappropriate for, like the formality.
Well, he always wears that, like
Raiders...
bright white and silver Raiders jacket.
Yes, it's a very bad look.
Yes.
It's very bad.
The best is when I saw Gradkowski's dad go up to Mark Davis... I would say minutes on the field before that Steelers-Raiders game I was at in Oakland. Uh-huh. And you would think in that moment the owner of a football team would not want to talk to a former player's dad. And I think Mark would have just carried on the conversation with Gradkowski's dad
game.
While the game was going on the sideline. He was that So in that respect, he's cool. That part of Mark Davis, I think, is endearing that he's...
I mean, there's got to be a couple things, like, a little off about him socially. Like, I don't just... There's got to just be some
He strikes me as a guy that has, like, a comic book collection in mint condition that he obsesses about.
Like, in, like, plastic casing and all that stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, my God, you could apply, like, several different... Like, he has the whole Criterion collection on Blu-ray or something.
He strikes me as a guy
that's
65 years old going on 9.
Do you think he's played a video game in the last month? Or did he come along too early for video games?
I think too early, but if he did, it would be Frogger on Atari or something like that, or Pong.
He's just got, like, Frogger on a 100-inch screen in his house.
Jonathan Jones from CBS Sports, who you see on the NFL Today. Among the reasons why Davante Adams' trade is unlikely this week, and then he goes on to cite multiple reasons, the Raiders' compensation request, meaning they're asking for too much.
Yep.
Adams' salary and cap charge, meaning that the prorated salary is too much for people to take on the books right now. The Steelers have that problem. Their cap space is around like $10 to $12 million, depending on where you look, and Adams has $13 million still left on his deal. Adams' injury...
Hamstring, which
so
apparently
Jones,
is legit.
Jones must think that's legit. The Jets traveling overseas. So the Jets are in London, so kind of out of the mix for a trade.
Well, that gives away the game, though, right there, I think. When you specifically cite one team being off the continent, I think that gives up the game.
Potential Week 5 injuries, so maybe the chance a team loses a star receiver and then wants Adams driving the price up. And then he says this, a potential change of Adams' opinion on where to land.
I don't think that last part factors in. I think he wants to play for the Jets. I think the fact that Jonathan Jones cites the Jets being out of the country and continent and across the pond is all you need to know about who has the obvious upper hand, who is the clear front runner. Like, did you see what the odds have gone to? They started out, I think the Jets were like, you know, plus 150 or something. They were the favorite to land him. In the last, like, 24 hours, they've gone to, like, minus 115 or something.
Okay.
Like,
so better than 50-50?
They're better than 50.
Uh-oh. Why am I hearing Larry Richer in the background here? Donnie, can you still hear us?
I hear you guys fine.
That was weird. Are we off the air right now, or are we still going?
You are still going.
We're off the air.
Oh, good.
So should we keep talking, Charlie, or are we not? Keep going?
Anyway, no, I just think that it's the Jets. I think it's the Jets. I think everything that's come up in this situation makes it, you know, makes it obvious that he wants to go to the Jets. They're waiting for the Jets to actually come back from this trip. And barring something really unforeseen, he's going to end up with the Jets.
How willing – here, this is a question. I'll try to answer my own question here in a second. How willing are the Jets to play hardball knowing that Adams wants to come here and that's ultimately going to be the thing that makes him the happiest? Can they afford to offer less, thinking like the Raiders don't have the balls to trade him to another team? Like, they have to trade him to us.
But by the same – sure, I can understand why you would go that direction. Do the Jets have the balls to piss off Aaron Rodgers by even entertaining the possibility
no,
that the
probably
Raiders could
not
call their bluff?
Because if you look at the teams that are linked, that are in this list of Adams' desired destinations, mm-hmm. where not that's I didn't say that correctly, places where he would play:
mm-hmm.
Jets, Saints, Steelers, Bills, Ravens, Cowboys, Niners.
Yep.
Okay, so Jerry Jones has already come out and said the Cowboys aren't trading for him. Mm-hmm. When the owner says that, you can cross them off the list. The Saints have no cap space.
Correct.
So I don't know how they make that work. They can want him all they want. Derek Carr and him have a special relationship. The wide receivers coach also coached Adams at Fresno State, so that's another connection. I just don't think they have the money to make that work unless they dump salary on the Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes it a more difficult trade. The Bills, there's a need there, but I think they want to go with this like team culture thing where they don't need
this
a big number
stuff.
One wide receiver. The Ravens, maybe. The 49ers paid Ayuk. They have Samuel. They have...
They paid
money,
yeah.
Trent Williams.
They paid Jawan Jennings.
Brock Purdy. They paid Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, Purdy's not getting cheaper. He actually looks like he's made a leap. They're
right.
Going to have to pay him every dime he wants.
So then you shrink the list really down to the Jets, the Steelers, and I guess Baltimore.
To me, it's just it's so far and away the Jets there. Here's a hype.
But here's I know, Chris, but the one thing I'll jump in and say is do not underestimate the Jets' ability to screw up a one-car funeral.
Like
it looks
Hassan
like it's
Reddick.
Obvious. It looks like it should happen. Do not underestimate the Jets doing Jets things here.
Yeah, they screwed up Hassan Reddick. Here's a wild hypothetical I would like to run by you. The Jets successfully execute this trade. Maybe they have to, you know, give up a second rounder or whatever. Whatever you want to say the trade comp is, they have to give up market value. Does Omar Khan hop on the phone and say, you know, you added Devontae Adams, and I know Garrett Wilson's not happy there. Hey, Joe, how about a first-round pick next year for Garrett Wilson?
I don't think they would do that in season, but maybe after the year they'd look
would
to trade
do
him.
Would
you after the season?
Would you give up next year's Steelers first for Garrett Wilson?
Yes.
So would I.
I would.
I think that guy's so good.
I would.
I really do.
Because they won't trade Lazard because he's Rodgers' other
buddy.
Security blanket.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think if there's anybody else on that roster who becomes like freed up as a wide receiver that they might trade who's not Garrett Wilson or Lazard.
They don't still employ Braxton Berrios, do they?
What the hell's happened to Malachi Corley there? Rodgers raved about that pick, and we were pissed because he had some Deebo Samuel qualities to him. Is he hurt?
Corley is setting the world on fire this year. One catch, 4 yards.
I get another guy. I'd say I take him back in a trade, but Tomlin would say, "Oh, that moving trade is like a train is like a bullet train that's moving 500 miles per hour, and there's no way, kid, you can jump on this thing and play this season."
Why did I think Braxton Berrios still played for them? He does not.
Donnie Ray Fittipaldo said he thinks the Steelers' max would be a second and a fourth round pick. Are you surprised to even hear a Steelers insider say they would go that far in what they would give up to get Devontae Adams?
Yeah, I thought he would have gone a little bit lighter on the Steelers' end.
Maybe he can't hear us.
Maybe he's very busy.
Maybe he just doesn't give a damn and thought it was a crappy question.
I can hear you guys.
Now, why are you going to
think about that?
Why are you going to throw yourself under the bus like that?
Maybe he's got bigger fish to fry. I heard.
Well, Pony thought you were just ignoring him, Donnie.
Oh, we can't hear it then.
There's something
going on here.
Yeah, there's issues. Okay. We can hear him in our ears. We just can't hear him over the air.